All right, everyone, welcome in. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. I'm Dan Canobio. That is not Chris Algieri. Chris is traveling. We tapped the next best thing in boxing business. He's Najee Grampus. You know him from Cigar Talk. He's very locked in, and I'm excited to do this. We've been wanting to do this for a really long time. Before we get into it, it is Fight Week, PPV.com. Keith Thurman versus Sebastian Fundora, March 28th. Live interactive chat. I will be leading that. So if you're going to order the fight, please do it with us, PPV.com. You can stream the fight on your tablet. You can stream the fight on your phone, big screen TV. No subscriptions, very clear stream. And I mentioned the live interactive chat, which I will be in hosting, taking all your questions. It's a really, really cool way to watch a big fight. And we got a big one on Saturday night with Sebastian Fundora and Keith One Time Thurman, who you were able to speak with last week. So let's bring in our fabulous co-host, guest co-host, Najee Grampus of Cigar Talk. Thanks a lot, bro, for stepping in.
Nah, man. Thank you, bro. I'm definitely not Chris Algieri, but salute to Chris. But yeah, man, I appreciate the invite, bro.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Been wanting to do this for a long time. We've had plans to do some content together, but you know how the boxing business works. Things get in the way. But we're going to do it now. We're going to get it popping. Let's go with it. We'll start from what we saw last night in the super middleweight division. We'll start there. Middleweight division. We'll start there with Carlos Adames defeated Amal Williams. Adames dropped Williams in the second round. He then cruised to a UD win. It was a good performance from Adames. He's very powerful. He's very fast. He showed why he's the best at middleweight right now in what is a very, very weak division. And Amal Williams was all heart. The dude was overmatched, and yet he was still standing when that final bell rings. Face was all mashed up. But this, to me, was Adames looking like the best middleweight currently in boxing today.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, I have to agree. I think Adames put on a, dominating performance. He dominated Amal. I mean, being quite frank, I don't think anyone necessarily had Amal beating Adames. Amal's a guy, like you said, a guy with heart. He does have some punching power. Isn't the most skilled guy, but, he's determined with a lot of power. I mean, Adames handled him well. I think overall, he is the best middleweight. Due to a technicality, there's an asterisk because the guy who I was thinking was the best middleweight just popped recently. So I'm very sad. Janibek? Yeah, Janibek, man.
Jeez, talk about messing up the bag. Janibek looked like for a second he was in line to fight Crawford. If Crawford's going to go back to 160, he's got two belts, and then he's popped for PEDs, gets stripped, which you don't really see too often in boxing, which I think was the right move. If you're going to do PEDs, yep. Usually it's a slap on the wrist in boxing. 6 months, you're out. These guys don't fight for 6 months. So what's really deterring, what's stopping these guys from doing PEDs? But yeah, the middleweight division is not great. This isn't our dad's. This isn't our grandfather's middleweight division. And in fact, it's very, very porous because you got Conor Benn ranked fourth. If you look at the Ring That's magazine crazy. Right now. Yeah, Janibek is popped for PEDs. Adames is on top, obviously. And then there's Arizlendi Lara, who is 43, 44 years old, at least on paper, and also will never fight Carlos Adames because they have the same trainer. And I just posted something on socials where, I straight up asked him, like, all right, if you win this fight, Lara, it's from his last fight on the Pitbull and Roach card. I said, will you ever fight Carlos Adames? He just straight up said no. Like, we have the same trainer. So we're not going to see the two best middleweights, I think you can agree, is Lara and Adames. So what is Adames doing? I saw he just tweeted that he's going to maybe go up to 168, which I think he should do. I mean, he's not going to go down to 154. Some people were suggesting that. It's very rare you see a guy move down, especially over the age of 30. So I think 168 for Adames is a really smart move.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. I think there is one more guy who I rate highly at 160 to me is the dark horse, and that's Yo-Yo Hernandez. I think the guy, the Yo-Yo, he's looking like a beast. I was there for his last fight, and I think he fought, was it Caron Davis? Yeah. I was there, and that was a beating, man. That was brutal. I was in the second row, like, send help. Throw the guy. I was about to throw in the towel myself. Like, that was crazy. But he's a guy who I would like to see Adames fight before leaving a division. But yeah, I agree. 168 seems imminent. And Lara, he's 44 on paper. And the Cubans, you never know what they're on paper. You never know. There's guys that on paper might be a certain age because you know how it is with Cuba. So for all intensive purposes, Lara might be 52, man. We don't know.
He's got, when I was looking at him up close, I was like, damn, like you don't look 42, like 43 years old. He's just like an unbelievable talent, Lara. But if you're not going to unify right now, then you know, what exactly are we doing? Yeah, Yo-Yo Hernandez is a beast. He's 9-0 with 7 knockouts. He's very good, but he's not tested and he's unknown. So I don't know if Adames will want to go that route. Like, what does he gain from that type of fight? You know, it's a low risk. It's a, you know, high risk, low reward. I never get that right. High risk, low reward type of fight for Adames that I just don't see him doing. But, you know, 168, you know, he can get in there and mix it up with some of the guys there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, 168 definitely has some guys. I mean, to be honest, I think the rematch that everyone wants to see is Carlos Adames and Hamza Shiraz, man. Like that right there was very controversial. I thought I had Adames edging the fight out. So, man, I feel like that one would be great next. I know when I saw him speaking about it in the past, he was like, I'll do it, but I ain't going to Saudi Arabia to do it.
Yeah.
So, and you can't blame the guy, to be honest. So hopefully that comes to fruition. I want to see that fight again.
I don't think anyone's going to Saudi anytime soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of issues over in the Middle East. Like the flag football game that was on yesterday was supposed to be in Saudi, and that got moved. And a lot of the UFC events are in the Gulf or might be moving. So you might not be seeing any fights in Saudi anytime soon. But, yeah, the Shiraz fight, I thought Adames won that fight. And, you know, that's a draw on his ledger. And then he's come so far since the Teixeira loss, which is 2019. Yeah. And I forget that he's only 31 years old. Like he's got wins over Derevchenko, and you know he handled Derevchenko, and then Julian Williams, Terrell Gausha, Shiraz. So he's on a nice little run right now. And you know, 31, he can now go into 168 where there's some higher profile fights.
Rate him, Dan? How do you rate Adames? Is he the high level to you? Is this guy? Are we knocking at the elite level door? Where do you rate him in the scope of boxing today?
I would rate him pretty highly. I mean, look at that. I mean, he's got a really good power shots. You know, he's very elusive in there. He's just a well-rounded fighter. And for some reason, doesn't get, like, the major push what you see from some other fighters. Like, you look at him and you see a guy that should get more of a push. Like, should be mentioned among the top. But he doesn't. He just needs to find a dance partner. I mean, the Shiraz, that should have been his coming out party. And unfortunately, it wasn't. So, you know, then he comes back and, you know, he's got the problems with the weight in his last fight. That didn't help. He could have been fighting on a huge card. He was supposed to be fighting on the Shakur card. And, you know, that falls through. So that would have been a big push for him to fight at the Garden, fight in front of a bigger audience than when we saw on Saturday night. I'm happy that Matchroom and they got this right back going and they were able to find a home for it. Because, you know, that probably did not make a lot of money last night fighting over in Orlando on that, but you know, it kept the line moving. But I think it's really good. I think he should be mentioned among the top, and I think at 168 he can make a lot of noise.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Listen, all the belts are up for grabs now at 168. You know, everybody get a strap. The straps are available. But again, there is one guy. You know, I'm the high risk low reward guy. There is another guy named Iglesias at 168. Oh, yeah. Oh, Dan. I'm scared of him, Dan. Like me, I am scared. I wouldn't put my fighter near this guy. That guy is scary, and I think everyone at 168 is going to have to see him. So, you know, this is a lot of stiff competition if Adames moves up.
Yeah, he's a beast, and no one wants to fight him. He's fighting for the IBF title, vacant title. No one wants to fight the guy. I think they went through three or four different contenders before one guy signed on the dotted line. He's a beast. But you're right. Like, these are guys that have, unfortunately, don't have a profile, but they're very, very good. Yeah. And in today's streaming world where we're going to see everyone, like, they will get chances and then you can watch them. And it's just, it's very top heavy now with boxing. You want to see the biggest names. Everyone wants to talk about the same five or six guys and they don't want to talk about some of the better talent in there. You could potentially see Xander Zayas move to 160.
That's good. I like that actually. I've been hearing talks about Xander and Boots. I don't know how real this is or if it's just internet fodder, but I've been hearing the talks, man.
Talks are getting louder. When there's smoke, there's fire. I do want to talk about that later on, but I do think There's a pretty good chance we see Boots in Zayas. Let's go over to 168 pounds. Lester Martinez with a nice win over Emmanuel Aleem, who showed to have a granite chin and to be very tough. I thought Lester was going to be able to get Aleem out of there in the second half of the fight, but he cruises to a UD win. Unbelievable atmosphere in San Bernardino. Yeah. The Guatemalans were tapped in on Saturday night. They were going crazy. That's awesome. He wins the interim belt at 168 pounds, which gives him a inside track to what we think is Mbili and Canelo. I mean, that fight is not finalized. It's heavily rumored. But if Mbili fights Canelo, the winner's got to see Lester Martinez. Obviously, Lester and Mbili had a very controversial draw on the Canelo Crawford card. All in all, I thought Lester had a great tempo in there. He's a fantastic offensive fighter. Very gifted offensive fighter. Doesn't have the most pop, because I thought he would be able to get Aleem out of there, who was much smaller and is a guy that has a few losses on there. But a win is a win, and he got the interim title. But maybe we pump the brakes a little bit on Lester.
Yo, Dan, listen, man. We got to pump the brakes just a little bit. I am the spoiler. I'm the overrated spoiler, man. And when guys get a lot of hype around their name, and it's not necessarily the guy's fault, right? Like, he's fighting everyone in front of him. But I think because of the surrounding circumstances, listen, you're with Bo Mack, one of the best trainers in the sport of boxing. Terrence Crawford spars him and goes to camp and all of these things. So I understand how the hype has got around his name. But for me, the fight yesterday, it left a little bit to be desired. You know, I definitely thought a guy like Aleem, who Lester should be a level above him, enough to stop him. Lester's a power puncher. I thought he did good, right? So I don't want to, you know, downgrade the win. I thought it was a good win. But I think, especially coming off a draw with all those Guatemalan fans in the house, you got to put this guy out, man. You got to turn his TV off. That's the reason we're here. And I just feel like with Lester Martinez, especially if you're trying to get to the level where he called out Canelo, I got to see a little more before I even want to see that fight. And before Canelo, Mr. Payday. Like, you got more work to do, brother. You got more work to do.
Yeah, that's the beauty of boxing, is you can hype up a guy, and he had a tremendous push. You had Pro Box and Boxing Scene. Boxing Scene is owned by Pro Box, so there was a lot of concerted effort to push Lester Martinez into the forefront coming off of the draw with Mbili. So there was a big-time push, and they did everything they could. You know, the promotion was, I thought, top-notch for what Pro Box is, and the crowd was buzzing. And they're throwing up graphics, Canelo and Lester dream matchups, and they're really pushing their guy. So it's important to get a win. Like we said, a win is a win, and you got to just survive and advance in this sport. But I also subscribe to the notion that how you win is very important. And it was set up for him to have a spectacular knockout or a stoppage, which is a lot more powerful than, you know, going the distance and getting your hand raised. And yeah, he won, but it would have been a much different feeling if he would have came out of there with a knockout win. And then you could start banging the drum and pumping your chest out and say, look, can I look what I did to this guy? Look what I'll do to you next. Or Mbili, or anyone at 168 can get it. Where it was more like at the end of it, it was, yeah, he won. But, you know, it's like now they have to really push even harder now, Pro Box and Boxing Scene, to get this guy up there. I think he's very good. I think he's top 10 for sure. But I don't think he's anywhere close to ready for even a faded and this version of Canelo that we see today.
I mean, I agree. I think if they fought tomorrow, Canelo beats him. But again, like you said, is, you know, Canelo is at the point, he's at the end of the rope. He's put in so much work here. He gets to pick and choose who he wants to fight. And again, it has to make sense. I don't think yesterday's victory was enough to entice Canelo to say, you know what, let me go get this guy, Lester Martinez. But conversely, like you said, Dan, I do want to commend him for bringing out all those Guatemalan fans. Ooh. I don't know of any Guatemalan world champions. It seems like Lester, if he can graduate from the interim level and actually get a real title, respectfully, I think that he would be one of the first Guatemalan world champions, I think.
No, he will. He is. He would be, because they were really pushing the title, Pro Box and Boxing Scene. It's an interim title, which I hate all the titles. I mean, I think you can agree. Like, there's way too many titles. But one thing I think, at least I come from, is that the interim means something. The interim puts you right in line. Still not a world title. And I think there was, like, some huge, like, Twitter account that has nothing to do with boxing. It was, like, had like 3 million followers. It's like a history account. And they tweeted about Lester Martinez being the first Guatemalan world champion. And like, of course, someone checked it. Like some guy, like one of the boxing accounts was like, this would be great if it was true. Because first off, there was another guy who won, a Guatemalan who won an interim title in 2015. And also, it's not a world championship. It's an interim title. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's boxing's all about branding, and I get that. But what the main point is that Lester is really fun to watch. I think that's the main thing. You want to get your money's worth, and he's really fun to watch. And also, ProBox is doing a phenomenal job. You know, Chris was on the call last night, and he's traveling. And, you know, there was like 70,000, 80,000 people watching at one point, which is like, it shows you. If you put a fight on YouTube, you're going to get a lot of viewers. A lot of, if you put, especially if it's free, if there's not, if the YouTube of that, but I just don't understand like how you make, you got to find ways to make money with sponsors and all that. But it's a pretty cool experiment to see how many people will tune in on YouTube for a free fight. And at one point it was like 70 or 80K.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, I definitely want to salute ProBox. They've been putting in work. I know, I feel like it was every week in the month of March, they have something going on. And last week with Najee Lopez, that was a crazy fight. So I think ProBox has definitely been doing their thing. And yeah, I got to salute those guys.
Yeah, so that was the weekend. There was a crazy, I want to get to this. There was a crazy knockout in the women's. Did you see that? Jocelyn Camarillo. She signed with MVP. She fought on the ProBox card. She knocked out Isis Cio in the first round. And it was nasty, dude. Really, really, really scary. Like, scary and, like, she did her job, like, Jocelyn. But the other girl, I think she got to go to the hospital. Like, she was out cold. And it happened, like, quick. Like, first minute of the very first round. So, hopefully she recovers. But, you know, that's someone to keep an eye on, too. So, that was this weekend.
I did see the memes on her where they're saying she's the best-looking boxer in the in the game right now. So, I've seen the memes. I got to check the knockout, though.
No, I mean, she does a great job at promoting herself, and obviously MVP took notice and has signed her. They pretty much cornered the market. But yeah, if she can look the way she does and she has the knockout power, like, she will skyrocket in women's boxing.
What you say your name was again, Dan?
Jocelyn Camarillo.
All right, Jocelyn Camarillo, I'm checking for you on Cigar Talk.
Yeah, she'll be on a live with Najee come very soon. You had Caroline Dubois on.
Oh yeah.
Love. Yo, Caroline.
Dan, I love her. I think that she's girl awesome. Like, she's the next, to me, I think she's a star. I think she has all of the ingredients to be a star. The personality, even though she's from the UK, most UK people don't talk shit. She's not scared to talk the shit, and she backs it up in the ring. Knockout power, I think that girl's the goods, man.
Yeah, I did the live stream with her at the Jake Joshua fight. She joined after she won her fight, and I was running into her all fight week in the fighter hotel, and she's got like a dry sense of humor, like a very British sense of humor, but she's no nonsense. And she is really, really banging the drum to fight Baumgartner. And I don't know. I think Baumgartner told me that she wants to fight Serrano. Because we were all at you were there at the MSG presser. Yeah. And I was like pressing Baumgartner. I was like, all right, so, you know, your fight is 2 weeks after Caroline. We're on a crash course here. This is great that you have a foe. This is what boxing is all about. And she's had none of it, Baumgartner. She's like, she didn't even bring her name up, Caroline. She's like, I want Amanda Serrano. So we're seeing a lot of things shake out in women's boxing right now.
Yeah, listen, I'm on the block list for Baumgartner, so I may not be one of her favorite people. But again, listen, I just want to see the best fight the best. And Alicia Baumgartner and Caroline Dubois is the best fighting the best. And we need to see that.
Yes, we do. It's okay to be. I'm on many fighters' blocked list. That means you're doing something right. I'm not here to be friends. We're here to just tell the truth. Anything else happened this weekend? Oh, Mick Conlon retired.
He retired? I didn't see that.
Yeah, Mick Conlon retired coming off of a loss, which many thought was a win. He was one of the original guests on Inside Boxing back when we were Inside Boxing Live. We would do the show every once in a while from a bar, Jack Doyle's, where we had our last party. Top Rank would bring fighters over. This was like 2017, and Mick had just signed with Top Rank. So Top Rank would bring some over the undercard fighters to guest on the show. And he was one of my original guests, and he was still is a great guy, very cool dude, down to earth. Obviously had that crazy Olympic career and then signs with Top Rank. And then had that debut with Conor McGregor walking him out, and then never reached the pinnacle. Was so damn close against Lee Wood. Bro, 2022 fight of the year, Lee Wood and Conlon gets knocked out of the ring in the final round. That was like,
dude, that hurt me. I'm a big Conlon fan. That hurt me when Lee Wood did that. Like, oh man, I like the way he put on for Ireland, man. Mick Conlon, he's always put on for Ireland. So, you know, great career. I didn't realize he retired. Great career from him, though. I like Mick
Conlon. Yeah, he was pretty quick. It was like right after the fight. So it was pretty clear. He said that, you know, he thinks he could still fight on, but he doesn't really feel like he has the abilities to win a world title. And I respect that. So, you know, you hung him up real quick. And a lot of times you see this, you've been around a lot of fighters where, you know, if you start thinking about retirement, starts creeping into your head, you're almost half retired. You're almost retired. I mean,
I respect that he's able to keep it real where he's at, though. Like, you know, listen, I don't know if I'm going to be able to win a world title. I think a lot of guys have a certain delusion, and I respect the fact that he can see where he's at and call it a day.
Yeah, you got to be delusional to be a boxer. You got to have a lot of delusion in order to get to the top. But shout out to Mick Conlon, one of the real ones. I'm sure he'll get into the media game or promoting. He's very, very locked in over there in the UK when it comes to the boxing business. All right, that is the weekend. Now we get into the fun stuff, Najee. Now we get into the heavy hitting. This is why I wanted you on this show, because you got takes, my friend. You're not afraid to throw out takes.
And
you get
checked.
And you get questioned. And you get co-signed. That's the beauty of Twitter. I'm out there on those streets, too. It's tough out there. It's fun. But every once in a while, you're gonna anger some people, which I'm not afraid to do it. Where should we start? Let's start with our boy Shakur Stevenson. You had him on your platform. He wants to spar me, so I don't understand why. I think we've smoothed that over, not officially, but I think we're cool now. Anyway, I think he's outstanding. I think he's he's one of the best. I favor him over pretty much everyone today, and that's the main question. Najee, in your honest, humble opinion, who has the best chance to dethrone Shakur Stevenson today?
Yeah, that is a tough question, man. I think, you know, I'm very high on Shakur Stevenson, have been for years. I've been telling everyone from the mountaintop, this kid's the goods. He's the next level of, you know, stars that we say are the A level. I've always believed he was that, and it's starting to show more and more each fight. I think if we're talking about a guy that can beat him, from 135.
First of all, I just want to preface this. Shakur, if you're watching this right now, this clip, I don't think anyone can beat you. I favor you over everyone, but who's the fighter out there that can give him the most trouble?
Yeah. Well, listen, from 135, are we saying from 135 and 140, those two divisions, or 47 included?
135 to 140, because he's obviously not going to 147 anytime soon. I think he's made that clear that he will go on his terms. So yeah, 135 to 140.
All right. There's only one guy that I see that has potential to actually beat Shakur. There's only one guy. Unfortunately, the boxing world is never going to get to see it because they vowed not to fight each other. The guy's name is Keyshawn Davis. That's the only guy. When I'm looking at what they do, number one, the experience of just having rounds with Shakur, right? Like, these guys spar all the time. I'm sure he knows Shakur's, you know, his nuances, his technical abilities, the things that he's had success in sparring against. Keyshawn also is the naturally bigger guy, a guy with some length. He's a little bit bigger than Shakur, and he has power, great boxing skills. I mean, if anyone can beat Shakur, it's the guy that spars him all the time, Keyshawn Davis. Unfortunately, listen, I'm not a fan of it. I told him all the time, man, I don't care about the brother thing. I want to see y'all fight. I want to see it. Of course, they don't care. They don't respect it. But to me, that's the guy that has the ability to beat Shakur. If there is anyone that can beat him, it's Keyshawn Davis.
I totally agree. We did an episode after Shakur won, and we kind of did the same experiment, this thought process. But I think we added 147 into that because at the time, I thought maybe there was a chance that Shakur would go up to 147. That's when I had Haney at number one.
Yeah.
In terms of giving Shakur the biggest issues because of his length, size, defensive abilities, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So number two on our list was Keyshawn Davis. And I totally agree. The explosiveness, the length, you know, he does have a good jab, Keyshawn, great defense. And then what you said, which was a great point, was just the experience and the familiarity of being with Shakur.
Yeah.
You know, being around him, sizing him up, learning from him in sparring, and those are huge things. And it's very unfortunate that these two, I think it's great that they're friends. Let's be real here. Like, it's awesome. But this is a business. This is a business more than it's a sport. I wonder down the line if they will ever change that, because the storylines would be there. Like, there would have to be some type of falling. I think Keyshawn needs to keep on winning and Shakur needs to stay on his path. And then, you know, egos come into play.
Yeah. I still think one day it can happen, man. I still think one day, you know, that when the smoke clears and maybe if those two guys are at the top, and you just never know, man, what can happen. So I can still see it to this day. To be honest, I used to think that Gary Antoine Russell was a guy that had a really good shot at beating Shakur. But now I just can't see it. I think at Shakur at 140, he looked amazing. He looked better than he does at 135, to be honest, as far as his comfortability, his size, the speed, the power came up. When I saw Andy Hirioka versus Gary Antoine, you know, just even the little step back, right? Like that Shakur loves to do, the step back counter, it gave Gary a little bit of trouble. And Shakur is, come on, man, this guy's the best at that. So outside of Keyshawn, man, I don't know if there's another guy that really has a good chance at beating him. I don't know. I don't think so.
I was pretty high on Russell. I actually had him next. This was before the Hirioka fight, because I think Russell is just so inconsistent. Like, he looks phenomenal against Raya. One of the best performances of 2025, yep. I thought. He was throwing like 100 punches around. Landed something like 250 shots and looks phenomenal. Obviously, he loses to Puelo, and then he doesn't look great against Hirioka, who was legitimately like jet lagged, and like the guy came over from Japan like the day before the fight, and everything was set up for Russell to shine in that fight. And no knock on Hirioka, who was phenomenal. Same thing with Emmanuel Alim. Like the B-sides showed up in these fights, but yeah, I had Russell pretty high on this list. I would have to reconfigure it. Raymond Murataya. At 135, I know Shakur has talked about going back down. You're shaking your head, no. I think Murataya obviously would be the underdog, but I think he possesses a lot of skills that could give Shakur some issues.
Yeah, Dan, listen, there's three letters in an acronym. It's BTA, belt to ass. I think Raymond Murataya would get, I think he'd get embarrassed, to be honest, by Shakur. I'm looking at that and where I'm gauging it off of. I think Shakur is a completely different fighter than Andy Cruz. I think, one, Andy Cruz is a guy which, again, I say this respectfully, Raymond Murataya is a really good fighter. He's also a world champion, so I'm not disrespecting the guy. This is just,
he's in a belt to ass.
Respectfully. But again, we're talking about, this guy is different than Andy Cruz. One is, he has an inside game. Andy Cruz cannot really fight inside well. That's not his game. He likes, you know, lateral movement and the ability to, he needs space to operate. Shakur's shown multiple times he can fight on the inside. The second thing is, he has a lot more experience. And then the third thing, when I watched the Tevin Farmer fight, that let me know right there, a guy that can keep the distance with the jab and utilize angles has the ability to give Murataya a lot of trouble. And I feel like what I saw from Tevin Farmer, who to me is a level or two, or maybe two levels below Shakur, I just can't see it. But I still would like to see the fight. I still hope the fight comes to fruition.
Of course.
But I don't see it, brother.
That would be a ring. If he goes back down to 135, obviously Shakur doesn't have the belts anymore. But it would be a ring title on the line between the two best at 135.
So, wait, hold on. Where does Tank fit in all of this, Dan? Where is Tank in your sphere? Where does Tank fit in this conversation?
I have this on our list. I don't know how. I haven't known how to address Tank. I haven't known how to talk about it. Like, I just don't bring him up because I don't know if he's retired. I don't know if he's coming back. I don't know if his head is 100% in it, which probably be somewhere in the middle of those two things. I operate like Tank isn't on this list. And when we made this list, when we did this discussion, I said, all right, let's forget that Tank isn't, because I don't think of him as an active fighter right now. Until he signs on the dotted line and he's supposedly looking at a summer showdown with Pitbull Cruz, but we've seen this numerous times where, all right, Tank's going to come back. He's going to fight this guy. He's going to come back. But we just don't know. I mean, have you heard anything? Because
I heard the Pitbull rumors as well. But like you said, I mean, you know, I feel like every couple months there's a rumor that Tank's coming back to fight this guy and then he'll have legal trouble, or he's coming back to fight this guy and something else will happen. So I agree. He wasn't on my list as far as the who can beat Shakur's.
Oh, I mean, if he was active and like Tank was, like, let's say Tank beat Roach, And this is a whole different, like, alternate universe. He doesn't take the knee. He beats Roach. Maybe he does fight Jake, and he comes out of that fun, and profile is raised. Obviously, he'd be number one on this list. Like, Tank versus Shakur is probably the top three best fight you can make in all of boxing. Are we ever going to see it? I mean, that's why we tune in, and that's why we talk about these things, because we just don't know. Like, I think Tank wants to come back. I think there's a lot of things. I think he wants to go back. I think he's a prideful guy. Also, I think, you know, money is always a driving force. And from what I've seen, dude's got lawyers cost a lot of money. Yeah. Lawsuits. He went from making $40 million against Jake Paul to now in a pile of legal issues. And what's the best way to make money really fast? One night. You can get into the ring and show off your talents. So, I mean, if when there's smoke, there's fire. So if he does fight Pitbull and comes back, I'm still holding out hope that we one day see Tank and Shakur.
Okay. All right. Me too. I'm holding out hope too.
I hope. Because that boxing is in a better place when all the stars are fighting. Because that right there, that's like, put that in any arena in the U.S. and it not only sells out, but does over a million pay-per-views if we still are in the
guaranteed. I think that would potentially crack the top 10 of like gates and pay-per-view. Like, I think, you know, it's a huge fight. And I think at some point, both of those guys are going to realize, listen, there's too much money to just leave this on the table. And I do hold out hope that it'll happen in another year or two.
I think Shakur's doing a really good job of putting himself out there. A lot of fighters disappear after a big win. I always hated that. It's like they do all this promotion before the fight. They win the fight and then they disappear. You don't see them on Cigar Talk. You don't see them on any of the podcasts. You know, but not Shakur, man. This dude is doing, he's streaming. He's going on Rogan.
Yeah.
He's everywhere. And I said this to Algeria before the fight. I said, whoever wins this fight, T.O. and Shakur, like, they are going to be on the short list in terms of faces of U.S. boxing. Not the face, because, you know, Shakur needs a few more wins, but I mean, he is becoming a huge name, and he's definitely elevated his profile big time. So props to him for doing more media.
Yeah, man. I think he, you know, he's primed to be one of the next guys. Like you said, you know, you got to do more work to become the face of boxing. But that was the first, you know, elite level name that Shakur was able to have on his resume, and he passed the test with flying colors. It was actually easy, dare I say. And I think Teofimo Lopez.
Oh, my God. Really, talk about belt to ass. I mean, that was an 11-1.
Yeah, that was 12-0. Bad.
Got Teofimo thinking twice about his corner, moving up to
147. What happened to your power, bro?
That was insane. Some of the worst corner work I've ever heard in my life. And like, it's just, everything gets exposed in this sport. Like, that's the beauty of boxing, is like, you don't train well, it gets exposed. You don't prepare, it gets exposed. You have a poor corner on fight night, it's going to get exposed. And if you looked at Teofimo's corner, but you had his dad falling over, yelling out nothings. And you go over to Shakur's corner. Great instructions, calm, you know, just a guy that's laser focused. So as much as Shakur wants to punch me in the face, I am a big fan of his. What's up with that,
bro? Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like Dan versus Shakur for the Ring Magazine belt, bro. I don't know what's going on.
I've never said a bad word about him. Does he tweet a lot? Yes. Do we make fun of him for that? Yes, but I tweet a lot. You tweet a lot. We all tweet a lot. I know what it was. It was, me and Chris were talking about the Four Kings, which Shakur was never a part of that discussion. This is about 6 months ago, before Shakur got in the ring with Teofimo, like well before that. And we're talking about Teofimo, we're talking about Ryan, Devin, and Gervonta. You know, these guys, for the most part, haven't fought each other, but they have the chance to. And I was like, you know what? We should throw Shakur into this list. He deserves to be ranked among them or associated with them, even though he wasn't, because he came up at featherweight, at 126, 130, while those other guys were at lightweight at the time. And then I was like, yeah, I wanted to show him some love. But then Chris piggybacked on it and was like, no, these guys are divas. They don't fight each other. So then Shakur was like, why am I getting lumped into that?
Yeah.
Thing, so he kind of should have.
So Chris gave you the alley-oop for Shakur to be mad.
Yes, like he should have went after Algeri, the fighter, because Algeri was the one that was throwing shade inadvertently at Shakur. So even when I try to give guys props, sometimes it gets convoluted. The next thing you know,
guilty by association. I get it, Dan. Yeah, that happens here.
Oh yeah, you've been there. You've been there too. I get it. What do you think, Shakur? Where do you think he fights next? Does he stay at 140, or like who do you think?
To be honest, I do. I think the Muay Thai is a good fight. I wouldn't see it. I think it'll be an entertaining fight. I think the opportunity to hold two Ring Magazine belts, you know what I mean, at simultaneously 140 and 135. I think that's a big feat in terms of accomplishments. It doesn't seem like the Ryan thing is going to come to fruition. Conor Benn has his list checked off with Regis Procre. So I think all of the bigger name fights that Shakur was looking for, it doesn't seem like those things are going to happen right now. So to me, I feel like Raymond Muay Thai is a good fight. I think, you know, he just came off a great win against Andy Cruz. So, you know, I feel like that could be next to me.
So you think Shakur would go down to 135?
Yeah, I think for him to have the ability to jump back and forth between divisions, I think he's going to exercise that. I do think he can go back to 35. And even when I'm looking at this last fight, the fight was at 140. He weighed in at like 138, right? Like this guy, he's not even a true 140 pounder, right? So I definitely could see him moving back down to 35.
That's like Tank. Tank was weighing in at 133, 132. Like I saw him the night before the fight at CVS eating ice cream before the Frank Martin fight where he told me eighth round and I put a stack on it and made me a rich man. Craziest, sheesh. One of the craziest boxing stories ever.
Wait, he told you that? Nuts. He told you eighth round?
That was wild. So we're stopped into the CVS on the strip to get like waters or whatever. And my buddy's like, yo, Tank is in the ice cream aisle. I'm like, yeah, okay. I look over and he's just chilling. He has a box of SpongeBob ice cream. Not just like one, like the whole box, like a six pack. And he's eating and he's walking through and he's eating them. He's with one buddy. And like we had done some content earlier in the day. So he's like, oh shit. We like recognized each other. I went up to him. You know, I wasn't taking pictures or anything like that. We were just chatting. And I was like, yo, so when are you getting this guy out of there? What round? And he goes, eighth. I was like, okay. All right. I'm gonna put some money on it. Left. Put whatever, a couple hundred on eighth. Guy knocks
him
out.
Damn.
Unreal. Dude, like Joe Budden was talking about on his podcast that like kind of made the rounds there. And every time when I was seeing Tank after that, I would bring it up to him. But yeah, that was a wild story. But he makes the weight very easily. So he could definitely fight Shakur at 135. And Shakur is not big for 140. That's why the 147 talk, you know, like it was a strange thing between Shakur and Ryan. Like I just never saw that happening. Like I don't want to see Ryan at 144 catch weight. We've seen that already. We've seen what Ryan looked like when he fought Gervonta. It's a different person. So I don't want to see Ryan Garcia at 144. I want to see him at 147. No rehydration clauses, none of that. If it was to be Ryan and Shakur, where do you stand there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not mad at that. I think the only reason I wanted to see it was just because Ryan suggested it. I don't think it was Shakur who suggested it. Ryan was like, well, I'll come down to 144 and we can do that. So, you know, I would like to see it because I like those big star matchups, right? Like, there's just nothing better than having a star face another star. Obviously, coming off of what Ryan did to Devin Haney, we just want to see how Shakur would fare against that. You know, I just would love to see that. But, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think they're always going to be one weight class apart. That's the way it feels like it's always been. Shakur was at 26. These guys were at 30. You know, they moved up. He moved up. So they're always one weight class apart. So, I mean, hopefully a catch weight can solve that issue and we could just see it at some point. But it doesn't seem like anytime soon that's going to happen.
I'm not a big fan of the catch weights. I think the Ryan Gervonta opened our eyes to guys fighting out of their weight classes, rehydration clauses. I don't want to see that for that fight. Like I agree. Like we want to see the biggest names, and now we've kind of broken down the barriers and broken down the walls where we can pretty much get any fight now in boxing because of Saudi, because of Turkey, because now DAZN has everyone. So it's like we were programmed for a while as boxing fans to be like, all right, there's no way. Like Teofimo Shakur, like so much has to happen for that fight to be made. Okay, it gets made now because of Ring Magazine and the money being thrown around there. So now we're like, all right, what's the next big fight? Like, obviously, we want to see the next big one. Whereas I think the boxers, I know they want that smoke, but they might not want it necessarily next. So, like, we could marinate a fight. Like, I still think marination will happen in boxing because you can't just go from one fight into the next one, into the next one. Like, I still think it should happen within the next year. Like, Shakur should be in another big fight in the next year. But we may not, like, see Shakur jump right to a Ryan Garcia from a Teofimo Lopez or right to a Devin Haney. Like, a Muretaya, which is still a high-profile fight to hardcores, will cross over into the mainstream. Yeah. Probably not. But it's still, like, that's an outstanding fight. So I could see that from Shakur. I could see him going back to 135. I could see him maybe at 140. I could see the Roach fight. If Roach
gets
past Cepeda.
That's a good fight too, man. Lamont Roach and Shakur Stevenson. I like that. I'm not a big hater of rehydrations. You know what I mean? I don't know that a rehydration against Tank would have changed the outcome. I don't really think that.
No, but it would have been a better fight.
I think he would have still got knocked out. Like, to me, it didn't look like, you know, maybe he was. I mean, maybe it was tough to make the weight. But I'm saying is the way that happened, you threw the left hook three times and he countered you. It's Tank Davis. You could have did that at 47 and he would have punched your lights out, whatever weight you were at. He would have did the same thing.
But you see, Ryan looked like a different human. Like, I didn't recognize.
Like the size?
You look back at that fight. He looked like a skeleton.
Yeah.
But he signed it. Golden Boy and Oscar did not want him to sign that. He went renegade. He went, I want this fight by any means. Signs the rehydration clause, which are very dangerous, I think. 10 pounds, which I think it should be a percentage. Me and Algeria talk about this all the time. I think the IBF has kind of done that now. But some is like a hard number, like a 10 pounds, and then other weights, it's a percentage. I think it should be like 15%, which would be not 15%, but it should be like 12 or 13, 14 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, I should say I'm not in favor of rehydration, but I'm okay with catch weights. I think a catch weight to me is fair.
Catch weight. Yeah, if you can do a catch weight, one or the other. If you can do a catch weight, rehydration.
I'm with you there. All right, we on the same page with that.
So if they could agree to 144, and if Ryan thinks he can boil down and make that, and then he can, like, put on the right amount of weight. But I understand Shakur's sentiment here. It's like, I'm not stepping in the ring with, you know, being 20 pounds lighter than my opponent. But then again, it's just like that part was a little strange because when I saw them drawing at each other in the ring after the fight, I'm thinking my mom is excited just like everyone else. And I was like, all right, let's let this play out a little bit. Now we're going to get into the weights. Now we're going to get into the negotiations. Now we're going to get into the clauses and all that. And like anything else in boxing, like we're going to see the uglier side, like the negotiations that play out on social media. And then we're not going to be as excited for this fight. And now we're not going to get that. So we got to move forward with other fights for Shakur Stevenson. Let's go over to heavyweights. Your guy, Alexander Usyk, is fighting Rico Verhoeven from the Pyramids, a kickboxer. I do not like this fight. I think that Usyk obviously has the right to fight anyone. I get that. The fact that it's the WBC title on the line is what, obviously, I don't think anyone can agree that Rico Verhoeven, outstanding fighter. But should he be jump the line to fight for a world title? Absolutely not.
Yo, Chris, this is nasty work, man. I get it. Like, we're trying to soften the blow with pyramids and all. Listen, the mummy Tim Hope Tep, they're rolling in their fucking tombs right now. What the? Bro, come on, man. I'm just saying is everyone online is like trying to make this thing that I'm a Usyk hater. I'm not an Usyk hater. I just feel like I want the standards to be the same for everyone across the board. I feel like if there was any other fighter, maybe not named Canelo, who's dominated for three generations now, and they fought like a kickboxer or whatever this guy is, they would get assaulted. They would get verbally bashed nonstop every day. And it seems like now with Usyk, it's like, well, you know, this guy, he deserves it. Or, well, now he's 38 and this and that. And I'm just like, I just don't feel the same energy. Like when I looked at Terrence Crawford, who is also 38 years old or 37 at the time he fought like Madrimov, he got killed for fighting a real fighter, Madrimov. It's just that a lot of people didn't know who Madrimov was at the time. So it was just like, this guy's moving up to 54 to fight like nobody. Who is this guy? And I just don't get it. I think the fight is terrible. I think Usyk, as holding the belts, the guy that's the undisputed champion should have to fight the guys that are in line putting in work, like my boy, Agit Kabeo.
You're the Caballo Hive.
Bro, I'm Caballo Hive. And I didn't just start this. I've been the Caballo Hive for the last like 2-3 years, man. I think that guy's the goods. I think he's proven it every time he steps up, even when he's the underdog. He shows up and he shows out and he's knocking guys out. It's not just like he's just beating you. He's stopping these guys.
So you think Caballo can beat Usyk?
Yo, Dan, I know he can beat Usyk. Usyk knows that he can beat Usyk. That's why he don't want the fight. My guy Caballo has been calling him out nonstop, and we all know Usyk is weak to the body. We know it. We've seen it. We've seen it so many times. And the best body puncher arguably in the sport today is Agit Kabiel. The guy knows how to go to the body. He's legitimately the body snatcher. Am I just going to act like this is an easy fight? Absolutely not. Usyk is a great fighter. It's not an easy fight. But I think at 38 years old, I think he slowed down just a tad, just this much. I think Usyk slowed down.
Where, though? Okay, I'm going to push back a little bit here. So I don't think that Kabiel could beat Usyk. There's not a fighter out there that likes getting hit to the body. But yes, we've seen that one punch from Dubois, which was low. That was not a body shot.
Dan, come on, Dan. Low? Low? Usyk had his shorts up like this. His shorts was all the way. Come on, man.
Usyk is... I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe that Kabiel can beat Usyk. I don't see any slowing down for Usyk. If anything, he battered Dubois the second time around. He's beating these guys twice, which obviously is the reason why many believe, okay, fight a kickboxer, take that route. You know, Tyson Fury has done it now with these crossover fights. Even Joshua has done it, fighting Francis Ngannou. Why isn't a guy like Usyk entitled to do that big cash grab? That's fine. The belts being on the line is the problem with that one. Even Fury fought Ngannou, the WBC didn't sanction that fight. So that shows you how far off how low the WBC has fallen to now they're giving a kickboxer a shot at Usyk's title. But back to the Caballo. Like, I like Caballo a lot, and I don't think Usyk is avoiding him. I just think that Usyk is in the stage of his career where he's looking for the biggest names. Like, he's entertaining a Fury fight for a third time, which
no one
wants to see, but it's Tyson Fury. Like, he's no one. Like, he's entertaining a Jake Paul. Like, he's doing stare downs. Like, he's going down all avenues right now. But Caballo does sell. Like, I was absolutely amazed by the scene in his last fight where that crowd was so engaged. One of the best crowds I've seen in years. But also, he was getting pieced up in those early rounds.
He was.
Like, he does have a lot of, he does have a lot of defensive weaknesses and defensive liabilities that I think Usyk would handle. I think Usyk would beat Caballo pretty soundly. But I do think they should still fight. If you're going to carry the belts, he's not undisputed, Usyk. If you're going to carry the belts and you're still at the top of your game, Usyk, like, you have to fight your mandatories. You have to fight the interim champ, which is Caballo. I 100% agree that they have to fight. I just don't think...
I just feel like there's excuses every time. First it was, all right, this guy's not in line. That was the first time they said that. His manager, he's only in the top 10. He's not in line. He's not the next in line. He becomes the next in line now. Now he is now is he interim or the manager? Like, he's the next guy in line.
Oh, it's WBC interim, and he's the manager.
So we can't use that excuse anymore. Then it was, oh, this guy doesn't sell. He can't sell tickets. He just did 13,000 seats in Germany. That's not even a big boxing market since the Klitschko's left, right? Like, this guy has already just shown he can sell. He's beating the big names. And I'm like, now Usyk's calling out Wilder. He's calling out kickboxers. It's egregious. It's egregious, Dan. Anyone else does this, they would get killed. When Fury fought Ngannou, he got killed for that. They killed him nonstop. And I just don't feel the same energy. And I think when I'm looking at Caballo, and I'm basing this off of, this is not just me hating on Usyk. I think he's a good fighter. But I think when I look at him, the times that I've seen him struggle, there was two times that are coming to mind specifically. And I got to go back and really do the homework again. But the two fights that I remember vividly, Maris Bradis at the cruiserweight. Oh my God. Listen, first of all, Usyk, he might have even lost that fight or a draw. That wasn't like, we're not going to act like that was just beat this guy up.
10 years ago,
though. Very, very close and hard, grueling fight. And the times that I see Usyk, it's guys that he beats. He's good with the bigger guys, the bigger, slow. I can see those punches. No, man. Cabello's your size, man. Cabello got some speed on it, man. And he knows how to bully. The second one I was going to say is the other fight that I thought was a very close fight, but he won. He definitely won. It was Derek Chisora. When he fought Derek Chisora,
oh, it was his first fight at heavyweight.
I think he fought the guy Witherspoon before that.
Chaz Witherspoon?
He fought Witherspoon When he fought Chisora, bro, Del Boy was getting in there on the inside and making it rough, and he didn't like the rough and tough stuff. I saw it. He didn't like the roughness. And Cabiel is a guy that's going to get in there and make it rough, man. I'm trying to tell you.
Well, two things. I mean, the Cabiel fight, I mean, the Chisora fight was 2020. Bradis fight 2018. So it's a while back. And Usyk has gotten bigger. He's gotten better. He's beaten Joshua twice, Dubois twice, Fury twice. The reason why I think that Usyk isn't getting the same hate as Fury is because of how he's beaten these guys. Like how he stopped Dubois. You know, he's handled Tyson Fury, handed him his first loss. He beat Joshua twice. You know, he kind of carries himself in a way where it's a little bit of a throwback where he's not doing excessive media, so you don't really see him a lot. You can't criticize him a lot. But even I am a huge, big Usyk supporter, and even I have said that he's been moving different the last year. There's no doubt about it. You just got to call it what it is. He's at the stage in his career where he's overlooking a Caballero. Because, like I said, he's looking for the bigger names. He's I wouldn't say he's bored, but he's cleared everyone out. So, like, what more can he do? Like, yeah, another thing, too, Najee, we have to wait and see. I know in this business, we want to just jump and pile on when a guy does something. What does he do after Verhoeven? If he fights Wilder after Verhoeven and that's the end of his career, then, yes, we should criticize. That's not the way we wanted to see Usyk go out. If he fights Caballero, which he said he was going to do, and Caballero has been promised that he was, then we could kind of obviously reverse course here and say, you know what? Usyk is a real
Dan, man. I feel like I saw something recently where they asked Usyk, who's the next three? He said, I have three fights left. He said, I want the winner of Wardley Dubois, which you fought Dubois twice already. You knocked him out. How many times do you want to knock out the thing?
No, I only want Wardley.
All right, so Wardley, cool, even though, you know, big skill disparity, but I respect the Wardley fight. Then he wants Tyson Fury again, like you said. No one wants to see that. You beat him. We get it. But I'm just saying is, if we're saying like, all right, this guy who beat, what, he's beat, is it six guys? Six guys at heavyweight? Albeit he's beat a few of them multiple times, right? He's beat six guys at heavyweight.
He's beaten Chaz Witherspoon. Yeah,
Witherspoon.
Okay.
Chisora.
Joshua twice, Dubois twice, Fury
twice.
So that's
five guys. You can't be the top guy fighting five. We can't say you cleared out the division.
Well, you can only fight who's there.
Guys.
You can only fight who's there, number one. But the way he's doing it and the way he's done it is what makes it impressive. Obviously, the luster has been a little off of Tyson Fury. Same thing for Joshua and Dubois. You know, this isn't like the 90s era. This isn't, you know, Holyfield, Riddick Bowe, Lennox Lewis. He's not disposing of that type. But you can only fight who was there of your era. And obviously you had a big issue with him being compared to some of the greats. And I think what you have to do when you look at Usyk is every heavyweight era has a guy that's emerged as the best, right? Ali. You go to the 70s with Larry Holmes. You go into the 80s with Tyson. And then the second half of it is when you have guys like Lennox Lewis emerge and Evander Holyfield. And those are the top crop. And they are now put into a list as the all-time greats. Usyk is the top crop of this heavyweight class, this generation, because he's beaten them, and he's beaten them without a doubt. So therefore, he is in the conversation. He should never be put in the same sentence as Muhammad Ali, but he should definitely be in the room because he is the best heavyweight of this generation, even if he's only beaten five guys.
Yo, Dan, I got to challenge you, man. I mean, all right, I don't want to say that. Maybe he's in the room, but like, you know, when you were at lunch, you know what I mean, back in middle school, you can't sit at this table, bro. Go sit over there. You're not at this table. This is an elite-level table. Let's analyze the resume. Let's just analyze it. And we can even go back to Cruiser, but heavyweight. Where do you rank Daniel Dubois? Where do you rank him? Is this guy like some guy that's an elite-level guy? He lost to Joe Joyce. Like, I mean, let's be honest. I'm respectfully.
No, he's definitely.
I'm not going to sit here and act like Daniel Dubois is like one of the best heavyweights. So, all right, cool. That's a good win. I say like Daniel Dubois to me, maybe like a B-minus guy, right? Is that fair?
Yes. Please, extra fair.
So now let's look at Anthony Joshua, the guy who lost to Andy Ruiz. Let's look at Anthony. Where do we rank? Is Anthony Joshua one of the, like, this guy is the best, or is he, where do we rank Anthony Joshua with a letter grade?
In terms of his contemporaries or like all time?
I would even say contemporaries, but all time, it's not even close. We won't even do that to Joshua, but contemporaries.
No, I think he's like, if you're going to have Dubois, beat him. So if you're going to have Dubois, B plus, what do you have?
That's
Joshua?
What I'm saying.
So, I mean, he's a top guy.
But this is what I'm saying is those two wins, the Fury win, you can't debate that. That is an A-level win, high class, A-level. Even though I thought the first fight was very close, second fight he made it like, yo, this guy doesn't belong here with me. A-level win. I just can't see how beating Dubois, Joshua, and then one A-level guy equals this guy is at the table with guys like Muhammad Ali. Let's be clear. Muhammad Ali, we're talking, let's look at his B-level guys, right? He's for George Shabalo. He's Jerry Quarry, Ernie Shavers, like, right? These are Bob Foster. Those are the B-level guys of that time where they're good. They're not A-level, but they're good, right? Like Ernie Shavers beat Floyd Patterson. So these are B-level guys. But then we have multiple A-levels. There's, you know what I mean? There's Foreman, there's Frazier, there's Archie Moore, there's, come on, man, Sonny Liston.
It goes to my point where you can only fight who's in your generation. And I think, are we also throwing in what he did at Cruiserweight? I understand it's not the same division, but we have to factor that in, that the fact that the guy came up, he's not a natural heavyweight, and he absolutely cleared out Cruiserweight and became undisputed there and then became undisputed.
Dan, who was at the Cruiserweight when he did it? Who?
Once again, the Breeders win
amazing.
Was fantastic.
Even though
that win could
have been a draw, but yes.
Gassiev at the time was a very impressive win. Marco Huck, so it was at the end of his rope, but it was still a Hunter.
Come on, Dan. Like, Marco Huck. I could beat Marco Huck with an 8-week training camp, Dan.
Okay, now you're... No, I'm sorry, man. No, I get what you're saying. Like, it's... With Usyk, you have to kind of have an asterisk. You kind of have to peel it back a little bit. He's not the top upper echelon of heavyweights. Because it's just this era is not as good as the other ones, even though I still think it's a pretty good era. But it's the way he's done it. It's beating them twice. It's coming up from Cruiserweight is why he's in a discussion. And
I just feel like there should have to be more for the bar to be where it's at. I think the bar's been set so high. I mean, if we're talking about clearing a division, there's guys like Joseph Parker. There's guys like, you know, we're now talking about Moses Itama. Of course, Agit Kabiel. I think there are other guys that would constitute clearing the division. And if he did that, I think he would have a better case. I'm just saying is I think in a weaker division where you beat two B-levels and one A-level guy, you can't sit at the Ali table. You ain't sitting there. You know what I mean? And I think he's a great fighter. I do. I want to preface this by saying he is a great fighter. I just think we should make the standard equal for everybody. And Usyk, to me, gets a lot of favor that other fighters don't.
And you think Kabiel beats
him. Dan, take that to the bank, Dan.
Wow.
Kabiel.
I hope we see it. I hope we should all head out there to Germany. I hope it's in Germany at the same arena that he fought the last guy, maybe even a bigger one. And because that place was insane. Me and Algeria talked about it. Like going, you know, Oktoberfest and all that and walking into that arena, that would be insane. I still think we have to wait and see. Even though I think a win over Kabiel doesn't cement Usyk's legacy anymore. But it's still,
yeah,
like,
I get what I mean?
Like, another thing, too. It's like, if he walks away and he fights Wilder next or Wardley or Kabiel, you know, he's still going to be looked at as one of the greats of this era. Where he rates all time, I think that's something that people will, the best of beauty of boxing. But I do agree that he's not at the top, in the top table. Like, there might be the front of the table. He might be just be sitting on the edge, like on the very edge, looking in. Like,
yeah, yeah. He's. Hey guys, can I sit? No.
Yeah, exactly. No,
not yet. No. Not yet. I don't want to say no. I want to say not yet.
But what is he going to do? There's no one left for him to fight.
I would disagree. So like I think
you think his legacy is etched.
He could have fought Joseph Parker. I thought the only reason Joseph Parker took the other fight against Fabio Wardley is because he wasn't selected. I mean, that was the fight to make right
there. That's when Usyk started moving different. That's the first sign of me that Usyk was moving different is when he didn't fight Parker, who 100% deserved
it. That's what I'm saying. He could have fought Parker. And that's why I'm just like, those to me are, you know, all the press, the past heavyweights we're talking about, even guys like Lennox Lewis, who he's lost to guys like Oliver McCall, but he came back and destroyed him, right? Or Haseem Rahman, and, you know, Haseem Rahman was a good fighter, came back and destroyed him. So I just feel like when we're talking about the fighting everybody thing, I don't really truly feel he's done that, in my opinion.
He did it, and then he stopped. Like, he did it. Fury, Dubois twice, Joshua. But then, yeah, like, no to Parker. I'm going to give up my belt, say I have a back injury. And the next thing you know, he's dancing.
He's breakdancing in the middle of Germany. So I'm like, yo, come on, man.
Was not a good look. I'm not going to say he's Teflon. He gets a lot of benefit of the doubt, like I said before, because like, he has that, like, no-nonsense approach when he was coming up. Like, cleared out cruiserweight, goes to heavyweight, clears out heavyweight. You know, his dancing, smiling, kooky guy. So everyone's like kind of gives him the benefit of the doubt. But then he started moving different. There's no doubt about that. I mean, and the jury's still out. If he gets the Verhoeven win, which he should, and then he fights Caballel or Wardley or Atama, I would love to see that. I would love to see a pass.
Dan, listen,
torch.
I'll tell you this.
Atama fights
if
this weekend.
If he beats my guy, Agut Caballel, I'll make Usyk my avatar on Twitter for a month.
Wow. You hear it here first on Inside Boxing. That's a lot for me. You. It's a big, big thing. I appreciate you putting yourself out there like that and making news here on Inside Boxing. Do we have anything else we want to get to? I had some other stuff, but we went passionate debates here. The Tama fights this weekend. Who do you got in Fundora and Thurman?
I mean, smart money says Fundora, but Thurman has a chance, man. I'm not counting Keith out, man.
He does.
I'm not counting Keith out. He's the better skilled boxer. I mean, obviously, he's the old guy. I told him, I had him on my show. I said, yo, listen, you're fighting for the unks right now. This is bigger than just you.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, I think he legit has a chance. Obviously, you got to go to the body. He knows that. But I don't, you know, Fundora has to be the favorite, but I'm not sure. This is a good fight. This is a better fight than I think people are giving credit
for. What's the line right now? Is it getting closer? It's a very good fight. It's a intriguing fight because Thurman is a wily vet. I mean, the inactivity, he will even tell you himself, like, the inactivity is the reason why no one's giving me a shot in this fight. But if it was a couple of years ago, if it was like the Thurman of during his prime, obviously he gives Fundora a lot of issues. We got to see how he looks in there. Yeah, that's on PPV.com. Everyone go out and order that fight. Join us in the live.
Wait, who you got as the winner, Dan, before we get up out of here? Who you got winning that one?
I don't know yet. I like to wait. I'm favoring Fundora. I think it would be, if Fundora wins, I think it's good for the division. It would be absolutely batshit crazy if Keith Thurman is a titleist at 154 in the year 2020.
Shakes up the whole division, brother.
Everything. I can see him pulling it off. Like, I was with Thurman at the Pacquiao fight up on the stage. I did some stuff for DraftKings, and Thurman watched the Fundora Zoo 2 fight, and he was locked in, and like, he wasn't talking, and Keith Thurman not talking is a very strange thing, and he's watching he's like studying, and he's like, I can beat him about Fundora. He's like, I can beat him because I know exactly what I need to do. And I'm like, damn, like, he's definitely got the belief. It's he's plus 280, Fundora is minus,
that's not bad odds, plus 380 is not bad,
minus 380. Fundora stops him. I mean, we've never seen Keith stop.
Yeah.
We've seen him dropped by Pacquiao, which was a wild scene. Oh, I think it'd be a good one. I think 154 is probably the best division, but we have to start seeing some movement in this division. Like Boots and Zayas would be a great fight. Boots and Virgil obviously is on ice. I mean, all these champions are with different promoters, but now they're all under one network, essentially on DAZN. Who's the best at 154?
I mean, right now, I would still have to say Sebastian Fundora. I got it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
one?
I think he has to be. I think he's proven it. I think he's the guy to beat. You know, I think Boots obviously looks skilled, but you ain't gonna get. I can't say you're the best by beating Lima Beans. We can't do that. It's to no fault of his own. You know, I think Boots wants these fights clearly, but until you do it and get out there and beat some of these guys, I can't have him as the number one. So I still think right now Fundora's number one. But I like how Xander Zayas is doing, man. He's getting a lot better. He's progressing. He's working. He looks a lot better than he did 2 years ago, and he's still young. So I like Xander Zayas too.
Yeah, I think people are sleeping on Zayas because he's got, like, they look at him not as a big puncher. Dude can box. He's very hard to hit. He's getting better. I don't know how long he'll stay at 154. He's also building his brand. I mean, you get on the halftime show of the Super Bowl, and you're
when you got Bad Bunny phenomenal. In your corner. Yeah, you're about to level up, man.
Yeah, that was awesome to see. Virgil Ortiz, I still think it's at the top. Fundora, Zayas. This is the ring rankings. Ennis. I honestly think we might see Ennis Zayas in June.
Yo, I'm not gonna lie. If I was top rank, I wouldn't do that. But
I know, me neither. I think it's way too risky. And apparently, according to Chris Mannix, Zayas is the one pushing the negotiations.
Maybe he sees something. I don't know. Maybe he took a look at that Karen fight and said, you know what? I can. There's something I can do here.
True. Not that, you know, they fight exactly the same, but, you know, Zayas is a mover. Hopefully we see these fights, man. I think boxing's in a good place. I think with the zone now and getting top ranks is a good thing. And we didn't get to Zuffa. I got to have you on again. Maybe we'll do it live and we'll talk about the business of boxing, because that could be a whole hour show, because I think it's going to be Zuffa versus
everybody.
I honestly think so. I've heard some rumblings now with like top rank. Golden Boy now is going to re-sign with the zone. And I think we're going to see some things start to shift. We're going to see a cracks. You know, I think Zuffa's going to go their way. And then I think the others are going to... I think DAZN really wants the best fights. And they're really pushing
for that.
They're really pushing for every Saturday night. That was like music to my ears when the CEO said that. Like, we want a marquee fight every Saturday night on DAZN. And now they have four or five different promotions that they can choose from. And they're like, I don't want to hear anymore. This guy can't fight this guy. Like... They got burned on Virgil and Boots. Obviously, DAZN really wanted that. And now they're like, okay, what's the next best one? Zayas and Boots? We have to have that in June.
I agree. It's like the only other promoter is MVP, who they're doing their own thing. Obviously, Netflix, ESPN now with the MVPW. So I got to salute them too. But, man, it's definitely going to be interesting over these next couple of years, man, for sure.
Yeah, everything's about to heat up too. It's been a little bit of a slow start to the year, but I think once next week this weekend on PPV.com with Thurman and Fundora, then pretty much every weekend till June, there's big fights. So I appreciate you coming on, man. Tell everyone where they can catch
all your
stuff.
Yo, Dan, thank you, man. Listen, if you haven't checked me out, please do. My name is Najee. I have a podcast called Cigar Talk. At Najee Chill, N-A-J-I Chill. That's where you can find me on all social media, Twitter, Instagram. You might not agree with some of these takes, but I back them up. And I throw a lot of grenades on the timeline. So, you know what I mean? Come through. I'm open to debate, man. Let's talk boxing. Let's debate it at Najee Chill. And check out Cigar Talk on YouTube.
Najee Chill, where you will see Usyk's face on Najee's
Let's
Twitter.
Let's do it.
Wow. All right, Chris will be back on Thursday. We'll preview Thurman and Fundora and all that good stuff. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs.